thing on?
No, we won't do that.
Why not? All right, everybody. Hello. Welcome to the Athletic Support. I am Marc-Antoine Gallin alongside Arpin Basu. We're Friday, February 21st, only 3 days before trading deadline. And it's, my God, Arpin, this is exciting times. Every year, no matter the situation that Canadians are in, it always brings a little bit of jitters.
It does, yeah. And it's, you know, I'll say that I think that Canadians fans should legitimately be excited because Marc Bergevin has proven to be an excellent seller at the deadline.
Yeah.
When he's in a position to sell, more often than not, he does some excellent work. He gets a lot of value for the guys that he decides to put on the trade market. And if he hasn't traded a guy, it means he can't get that value. And so he's been pretty astute at this time of year, particularly when he's a seller. It's not to say that he hasn't had good years of buying, which he has. But in a selling role, he's been really good. And so...
Doesn't that say something about the guy himself? In the sense that, in the way he presents, the way that he sells himself to the public, to his peers, to Jeff Molson, maybe, you know, he's a seller.
Well, yeah, he's a seller. He's a showman. You know, I mean, listen, you cannot convince me otherwise that the only reason he showed up in Colorado, sat in the press box for two straight games with Scott Mellenby, highly visible. Going to a team that has the most cap space, that's a real contender, that has lots of injuries, you cannot convince me for a second that that was not just a big show. That, look, here I am.
Yeah.
I'm here. I'm open for business. Am I talking to the Avalanche? You don't know. I might be.
Yeah.
I'm here in Colorado. I'm watching their team. But the thing is like, why is he watching their team? Colorado's not going to trade him anyone off their roster. There's no reason to watch the Colorado Avalanche unless he's working on some sort of extravagant hockey trade, which I don't think. Listen, if he does that,
well, there are some defensemen over there that might be available.
To me, it was a show.
Ryan Graves or Nikita Zadorov.
But like every time Bergevin does anything in the public eye, it's a ruse.
Yeah.
It's a smokescreen, and we've seen it many times where Bergevin will pop up in a press box somewhere, and everyone starts going, "Oh, Marc Bergevin is here!"
Yeah,
and nothing ever comes of it. So I think the one thing to take from, to me, the one thing I took from him showing up in Denver and spending 4 days there or 3 days or whatever it was with Scott Mellenby, was to say that he's probably not going to make a trade with the Colorado Avalanche. But otherwise to say that he is, you know, he's ramping up sort of the PR aspect of this time of year, wanting to make sure that other teams are aware of what he's doing, where he is, what he's thinking, you know. And so I think that there's a lot of balls up in the air right now for Marc Bergevin.
Mm-hmm.
And the beauty of his situation is that he doesn't really have to do anything. Like, basically, he could just trade Nate Thompson and call it a day.
Right.
And that would be fine.
Yeah, because he could wait for the summer to trade other guys like Max Domi or Thomas Tatar, for example. But, yeah, there's no pressure to do anything immediately. He's already done something. And, boy, did he manage to sell Marco Scandella. I mean, it was a beauty of a trade. Being able to turn a fourth-round pick in a matter of less than 7 weeks into a second-round pick, plus a conditional fourth-rounder if the Blues, if they win two playoff runs, if they win two rounds and Scandella plays more than half of their games, which seems to be like a very reasonable condition to meet when you're the St. Louis Blues. I think that's pretty interesting. Well, that whole thing was, in my books, completely impressive. I never thought in a million years that Marco Scandella could have fetched a second rounder to the Canadiens. But just by the way that all those defensemen went,
yeah,
on the same day, there was a bit of a domino effect that was created. And then Brendan Dillon, who was in the eyes of the St. Louis Blues, they swung out and missed on that one. But they turned to the Montreal Canadiens and offered a price that I'm sure Marc Bergevin was more than happy to pay.
Well, yeah. Well, he's to receive rather. I mean, yeah.
Yeah, to receive.
This
is
a beautiful thing,
yeah.
And you know, I mean, this was a situation where, like, this is kind of, it's similar to the situation he finds himself in with Ilya Kovalchuk, and let's start there. We're gonna try and do sort of a rundown of the assets that may or may not be in play, and sort of put a sort of an update on that. And so today at practice in Ottawa was Ilya Kovalchuk day. He spoke, Claude spoke extensively about him. It was an optional skate. Kovalchuk took part in the skate. You know, Darren Dreger on Insider Trading on Thursday. Reported that that Kovalchuk's agent JP Barry and Marc Bergevin are talking about the parameters of a contract of some sort. He threw out some numbers like 3.5 million base with bonuses up to 5 million, but who knows? I mean, whatever the numbers may be, you know, I think it's imperative for Marc Bergevin to get a signature on a contract before he decides to keep Ilya Kovalchuk. If there's no contract signed by, say, 2 p.m. on Monday, then you have to explore the market, see what happens, and see what you can, if there's something of decent value that you can get for Ilya Kovalchuk, you have to trade him, and if you want to re-sign him, then you can give it a shot on July 1st. I don't like their chances, if he gets traded, of him coming back, but I would feel very uncomfortable if I were the Canadians, but going past the trade deadline without a contract and missing out on a chance of turning that into a return of some sort.
He's UFA at the end of the year, so even if they wanted to have him back next year, I don't think that having him finish the season in Montreal would necessarily mean that he would have better chance to come back
not.
To Montreal, because
no.
His priority is to win the Stanley Cup.
Yeah.
He wants to have a long and meaningful, run at the Cup this spring, and I think that it becomes clear that it's not going to happen with Montreal. So if he liked the environment here, if he likes the experience, if he thinks that he can provide something to this team next year, well, I think that it might be even better off giving him the opportunity to go and try to win a cup somewhere else and bring him back instead of having him maybe, I don't know, risking the possibility that he might sulk because, oh gosh, he wanted to be traded, he wanted to have a run in the playoffs, and now he's going to stay with Montreal and enjoy the orange cones for April and May instead.
Listen, there's no way. It's, for that reason, for many other reasons, there's no benefit to keeping him past the debt past Monday if there's no contract signed. If there's a contract signed, I've already said I'm on board to bringing Ilya Kovalchuk back for one more year. There's a ton of reasons why, but the one thing about Kovalchuk talking today for the first time in a while, because you know his production has dried up and he acknowledged that and he said I have to produce, and he was asked about his minutes going down. And said, well, if I start scoring goals, my minutes will probably go back up. So, you know, he's in a good mood. But the one thing he would not say anything about were those contract negotiations that Darren Dreger reported on Thursday. He was asked point blank about it and said, you should ask Mark, as in Marc Bergevin. And then he was told that there was a report last night that JP and Mark were talking, and what can you tell us about that? And he said, well, I'm not JP and I'm not Mark. You should ask them. He was very, very noncommittal about whether he'd be willing to sign a contract before Monday. What do you say? All he would say is that all I've said since the beginning is that I love it here, and it was kind of a blah 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 moment, sort of. So it's, you know, I think if he chooses to, if Ilya Kovalchuk chooses to not sign, which, you know what, if I were him, maybe I would go the same. Maybe I would bet on myself too, because I'm Ilya Kovalchuk and I'm badass. Like the Kanye West story that Dave Chappelle told. My life is dope and I do dope shit. What he told someone on a phone call, anyhow, whatever. That I feel like is what kind of Ilya Kovalchuk is. And so, you know, if there was a guy who's going to bet on himself, it might be him. So maybe he will refuse to sign a contract in the quest for that Stanley Cup because he's not winning it in Montreal, neither this year nor next. Probably not next. No one knows, but probably not. So I would think that somewhere around 2:53 p.m. on Monday, he'll get flipped for a draft pick of some sort.
Do you think that the fact that Andrés Kassy from Anaheim has been traded to Boston. Boston was perceived as a potential, destination for Kovalchuk. Does it change anything in
the market for him? Well, yeah, sure, it changes something. Yeah, that's one less team. The way I view Kovalchuk is that he is probably the plan B for a lot of teams. There's probably like five or six teams out there who have some other primary target and maybe even another plan B, but there aren't enough forwards out there to satisfy all the teams that need them.
No.
So at some point, some team is going to strike out and they're going to get kind of desperate and late, creeping pretty close to the 3 p.m. deadline on Monday, they're going to circle back to Montreal and Marc Bergevin and say, okay, I want Kovalchuk. What's the price? And Mark, I would imagine, is going to hold out till the very last second in the hopes of finding a team that's willing to meet his price, which I would have to think is a second-round draft pick. But, I think if he gets a third and there's no contract, again, if Kovalchuk is not assigned a contract by then, I don't see how Marc Bergevin says no to a third-round draft pick for him. Because it's a free third-round draft pick.
Exactly. A second would be great. A third, considering the circumstances, it will do. But, if he was able to manage the second-round pick for Kovalchuk, it would mean the Canadiens would have four in the upcoming draft.
Right, but even as a third, that would mean they have 3 seconds, two-thirds, and three-fourths. Like, that's at their own draft.
At their own draft. It's quite significant.
It's nice. And so, listen, if you can get him signed by Monday, great. You have another skilled forward. And then that opens up options for Monday.
Yeah.
So now you have a viable, not necessarily a replacement, but you have a skilled guy who can play both the left and the right side, and who has impressed off the ice, probably even more so than on the ice. I would say he's the impression that Kovalchuk has left with the Canadiens off the ice has been more significant in many ways than his contribution on the ice. So without that unknown, Claude Julien has mentioned it numerous times and did so again today, how that was the part that was unknown about him and how impressed he's been by that aspect of him. If you can get him signed, then you keep him. And then all of a sudden, Tomáš Tatar becomes a little easier to trade maybe. Max Domi maybe becomes a little easier to trade. It makes more complicated deals a lot easier to make if they know they have Kovalchuk.
Yeah, because Kovalchuk most likely would be signed for 1 year, and the Canadiens will still have...
They should not sign it for more than one.
Yeah.
Let's make that clear.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And the Canadiens will still have a lot of wiggle room next year under the cap. It's really in 2 years where it's going to get a lot more touchy. But for next season, if they want to throw $3 million at Ilya Kovalchuk, it's not really an issue. So they could, if they find better ways to spend their money, fine. But I don't think that it's necessarily money that's badly invested. And especially if it provides them with a sure shot top nine winger, well then, as you said, Tatar and or Domi or both could be moved for other pieces.
Yeah.
And let's switch to Tatar, because there's, you wrote a very interesting piece this week on The Athletic regarding potential destinations for Tatar based on other teams' needs. And I think that you, you mentioned Colorado because you took, you used the I wouldn't say the excuse, but the reason that Bergevin was actually in Colorado and in camping there for a few days. Interesting scenario to see, potentially the Avalanche being interested, but there are other teams like the Islanders or the Dallas Stars where Tatar could be a fit.
Yeah, absolutely. And they're, I thought the Calgary Flames was actually a really interesting fit. The only problem there is that they have very little wiggle room cap-wise to get something done. Same thing with the Edmonton Oilers, who I didn't mention in my piece, specifically because their cap issue is so significant. And so, because, obviously, Tatar's former GM, Ken Holland, is in Edmonton. But, they really need someone on a Kovalchuk-type deal, actually, is what they would ideally be looking for.
Yeah.
So,
Unless they send some money back. You saw the Ducks acquiring David Backes along with a first round pick in the Kadri trade, the Canadians could do something along those lines, because you look they've got some bad contracts to move. I mean, they've got Sam Gagner, who's still who's at the tail end of a contract that gives him $3.15 million.
Right.
So
they could get creative there, but right. I mean, let's just be, you know, this is the ultimate tough call, you know? And I always think of Doug Armstrong when situations like this arise, because, you know, Tatar has another year left on his deal. He is part of, you know, the Canadiens' top line. And again, one of the best 5-on-5 lines in the league, second year in a row. Without any big names, without any big numbers, they consistently drive play. They shut down opposing teams' top lines by playing in their zone. It's a very, very effective part of this team. And Tatar's a big reason why it is. So this is the balance that Marc Bergevin has to strike, is that, okay, how much value can I get for Thomas Tatar? And again, the market is set in that sense. I don't think the Canadiens will take anything less than a first-round pick and a pretty darn good prospect, like, you know, an A-minus prospect, let's say. So if they can get that, like, the problem I found doing the exercise of trying to set the market for Tatar is marrying the two, is marrying a team that needs him with a team that has the assets to spend on him. And there aren't that many, ultimately. Like, Dallas, it's tough. It's a tough sell in Dallas. They don't have a second or a third round pick this year. So trading their first would mean their first pick would be in the fourth round of the draft. And again, no first round pick means no trade, as far as Montreal is concerned. The Stars have three really enticing prospects.
Okay, let me just interrupt you here. Why not the year after? I mean,
is so good this year. I mean, it's
clear. I know, but at some point, and I know that it's in Montreal and whatnot, but you can. It would be probably a better pick to trade. If you were to seek a first-round pick from Dallas, it's more interesting to have it in 2021 than in 2020, because this is an aging team that if you give them an asset to go further in the playoffs, there's a much better chance that they end up with a low pick in 2020 than the year after.
But I think that the situation the Canadiens are in right now, you know, in an ideal world, they would have... like, the fact that they have so many picks this year, so many picks last year, so many picks the year before. This group of 33, anywhere between 30 and 36 prospects, whatever number of picks they wind up with this year, you'd like to keep them somewhat bunched together so that they grow together and they wind up in a situation very similar to what's going on with Ottawa right now, where they have all these kids in Belleville at the AHL level playing well. They're one of the best teams in the league. They're having success together. DJ Smith talked about it today, about how they've want these kids to grow together through the AHL to the NHL and then succeed at every level together. I think the Canadiens should sort of follow that model. It's kind of why I asked DJ Smith the question, because you have all these kids coming up. In an ideal world, they all wind up in Laval together, more or less. They take turns coming up to Montreal the way Ottawa's doing this year. So if you punt it to next year's first round, well, then, you know, at some point, you got to get something from this group, right? And so I feel like if you don't get a 2020 first rounder, you don't trade Thomas Tatar.
Okay.
Just keep him, to me. Like, it's, in my opinion, just to keep that group together. Right. You know? So it's...
And just continuing on keeping the group together, if you choose to trade Thomas Tatar, who's one-third of a very potent line, you have to replace him, and there's no guarantee that you're going to be able to recreate the same kind of chemistry and the same type of efficiency on that line with another complementary winger than Tata. I think that if the Canadiens were open to the idea of moving Suzuki back to the wing, he would be a fit. Maybe Kovalchuk, on temporary basis, maybe, but he would certainly not being like the puck pressure type of winger that
Tatar is. Well, I gotta be honest. Jonathan Drouin at 100%, looked decent on that line earlier this season. Like, mm-hmm. he is the one guy who's had two auditions on that line. One last year, didn't work. But the one this year was working. When Tatar was taken off that line because he was taking all those penalties and Claude had enough with him taking all these penalties, he put Drouin on that line and he put Tatar with Suzuki.
Yeah.
And it worked.
The 20 games that we saw from Drouin before his injury.
Well, yeah, that's it.
This is if that's the Drouin that we're going to see, maybe not this season, because I think that it's a write-off at this point, trying to come back from his injury is clearly not comfortable. But let's say starting from next year, if this is the real Jonathan Drouin that we're going to see from now on, he can play wherever he wants, with whoever he wants. We know he's going to be effective because that was a transformed player.
Yeah, but I mean, I think he is the most natural replacement for Tatar.
Mm-hmm.
In the sense that, you know, taking for granted that the Drouin we saw before he got hurt, because frankly, I don't understand why he's even playing right now. Like, he's not effective, and he's not helping himself. He's not helping the team. There's just no real reason for him to be playing, other than if by playing he's rehabilitating his wrist in some weird way that I'm not unaware of. I'm not a doctor, but if indeed. And I think the Canadians have to kind of assume that that is the Jonathan Drouin that we will see on a more regular basis, the one we saw over the first 20-odd games. He is a viable replacement for Tatar on that line. And then, you know, and who knows? Like, you could, if you keep Kovalchuk, what it also allows you to do is maybe even, you know, look at flipping, like trading Tatar for a D prospect instead of a forward prospect. You know, like, I mean, it's just like, because, you know, I think it just creates a lot of interesting scenarios. You know, can you trade Domi for a young defenseman? You know, a similar RFA-type defenseman on a team that's got a surplus. I don't know. The Canadians even interested in doing that. Rob Rossi reported that the Penguins got a hard no from the Canadians when they asked about Max Domi, but that might just be because it's the Penguins.
Yeah.
Maybe if the Minnesota Wild came calling, it'd be a different answer.
Well, because I'm sure that the Canadians have looked at every team's pool of prospects and picks, and they know who they're interested in.
You know? Well, of course,
so,
yeah.
So, yeah, but regarding Domi, the fact that he's got such an up-and-down season with more downs than ups, I wonder to which extent it can really downgrade his value, and if teams won't start wondering if what we saw last year from him, the 72-point season, is an outlier in his career, and he's coming back this season with his inconsistency and probably heading towards something, what, like 55-point season or something like that, which would be more in line with what we've seen in the earlier seasons of his career. So
wouldn't you say that would be when they made the trade, would you not say that was kind of the expectation for Max Domi? For him to be a 55-point player?
Yeah, I think it was. I think that he's not, he hasn't shown to be like the sum of all his parts yet, because he's got such tools that are so attractive, and the speeds, the hands on some nights, you know, very surgical precision to his passes, and it's another
decision
night
making.
And it's another night, decision making is killing him. So it's that's why I think when I look at him and I say, okay, well, 55 points is good enough, especially since the Canadians got him for Alex Galchenyuk, who's bounced around a few teams since then, and he probably end up in the KHL next year.
Mm-hmm.
So it's good. It's just that once the Canadians have had a taste of what a Max Domi at his best could do, 72-point season, say, well, if we choose to trade him now, and after he's proven that he's a top six center, we should be expecting a pretty hefty return.
A top four defenseman.
Yes.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, that's the situation there as well, is that, you know, I think in both cases, you see, like, once you move past you know, Nate Thompson, who I think we'll get to in a bit more depth in a bit here, and Ilya Kovalchuk, which is slightly more complicated than Nate Thompson. You get into all these phases of the Canadian sort of trade pieces that become, like, basically the leverage lies with the Canadians in the sense that if you make it clear that a Thomas Tatar or a Max Domi is available and you have multiple teams looking to acquire that player, and you're in no obligation to trade that player because they're not UFAs, you have all the leverage. You can just sit back and be like, well, I don't have to trade him to you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's really a great situation for Marc Bergevin to be in, which is why off the top, I thought it was important to point out how good he is in these situations when he has players that teams want. Like, this is generally where he's at his best. But the one thing I'm worried about when it comes to Marc Bergevin is him overly emphasizing next season. Like, if he's presented with an offer that will not immediately help the Canadians in next season,
yeah,
I fear that his own desire to absolutely make the playoffs next season will force him to say no to that deal because it doesn't help him soon enough.
Well,
and it would be a short-sighted way to go about it.
When you talk about a first-round pick and an A or A-minus prospect for a guy like Tatar, or even,
well, that A prospect, that A prospect has to have a viable chance of making the team next season, a la Suzuki. I mean, that's really, the Suzuki's the model of the guy that they want, like a prospect like him, who is in junior or in the AHL and is ready to debut next year. Like, that's the guy that I think that he would be looking for. What I'm saying is that if you get an A prospect that's 2 years away, you can't say no, because it's still an A prospect, you know. But like, my fear, and I'm not quite sure where Bergevin's head is on that, is that if the guy is too far away, he would just say no, because this would create a hole on next year's team. Like, trading Tatar with no replacement or no replacement somewhere in the lineup creates a hole on the Canadians. Like, this is how they see Tatar. This is how they definitely see Petrie, is that we're not going to trade a guy and not have and have this huge gaping hole in our lineup next year.
Sure. Yeah. But there has to be a certain level of continuity. And I totally get it for Petrie, and I agree with that.
Mm-hmm.
I
it's not only next year in Petrie's case.
No.
It's for years to come.
You know? And I mean, you know, a few weeks ago, we were contemplating the possibility that that Shea Weber's career might be compromised. Imagine that. Imagine like this... this injury reappears, that ankle or foot, that foot injury, something else happens, but Shea Weber starts next season on the DL, for example, on the injured list. DL is baseball term. I'll say IR. And they've traded Jeff Petrie for futures. Well, that's just not cutting it. They because of Weber's older age and Weber's, you know, being a bit more prone to injury now than he was 5-10 years ago, they need Petrie. And it's not as if Petrie was 37 himself. He's what, 32 now? And even if they have to extend his contract and give him a new deal, 2 or 3 years, well, personally, I'm all for it. Because it's not as if they've got a future Norris Trophy winger on the right side. All their prospects on the left side, save for Cale Fleury.
And Noah Juulsen. Let's hope for Noah Juulsen. I hope he plays himself back into the mix here. But
yeah,
he's also a factor on the right side. But it's very thin as far as right D is concerned.
So that's why I don't see Jeff Petrie being traded on Monday.
Neither do I.
And even not this summer.
But this is my point, is that if someone comes at Marc Bergevin with a trade offer so ludicrous, but that is a long term deal, these are players that are 2 or 3 years away from helping the Canadians, but it's bonkers. The return is crazy. But doesn't help them next year. Does he make the deal for Petrie specifically? Tatar is a different animal because I feel like they can replace Tatar in other ways. But Petrie, do you make that trade?
But you have to define bunkers. We're talking about Colorado. To me, bunkers is not Graves or Zadorov. It's not even.
It would be okay.
Bowen Byram. That's bunkers for me.
No. Okay,
that's not
okay.
Happening.
All right, but let's say Colorado trades you their first this year, their first next year, and Newhook. That's 3 years worth of first round picks.
Yeah.
For Jeff Petry. I don't think they would do that. Let's make that clear. But let's say they did.
I feel we're in
Newhook.
I feel we're in draft day. You see that movie with the
chemicals? Yeah, but okay, like Newhook is more or less committed to going back to school next year. So he is not coming to the NHL next season and probably not the season after that.
Yeah.
And so, you know, assuming he'll need a year in the AHL, whatever, he'll probably turn pro after next season.
They like him, but they're not in love with him.
No, but they like him a lot.
No, I mean the Canadians.
Oh, the Canadians, not the Avalanche. Right. The Avalanche are very fond of Alex Newhook. They're not just gonna trade him. Likely they wouldn't make this offer, but whatever. This is a purely hypothetical situation. Just because Bergevin was in Colorado, you see what happens?
Yeah.
He shows up in Colorado, and Colorado winds up in all the trade rumors. Really, he did this to sink the Avalanche and just be like, "Ha! I'm going to sick my Montreal media on you guys like you've never believed." Anyhow, in that scenario, it would be somewhat ridiculous to say no to two first-round draft picks plus a player taken in the first round, one pick after your own pick. You know, I mean, it was like, but that would not help them next year, and their defense would be atrocious.
Yeah.
Next season, what do you do?
Well, the thing is, if I'm not in the eighth year of my tenure as the GM and I'm concerned for my job, I do it. But you've got to wonder at some point if missing the playoffs 4 years out of five and 3 years in a row, which will be the second time in the Canadiens' history that they miss the playoffs 3 years in a row. Well, that becomes, there's an added pressure not only on the team, but on the GM himself in order to save his job. And as much as he's always said that he would do what's best for the Canadiens short term and long term, well, humans are humans. And at some point, I'm not sure if he would make that deal.
Well, in that case, he either needs to be extended or fired. Like, that's really what it comes down to. I mean, that's. I don't know. I think Marc Bergevin.
For those who wonder, his contract runs up at the end in 2022.
Yeah. So it's, you know, he has some rope to play with. I don't get the sense he has a great fear of being fired.
Mm-hmm.
Or let me rephrase that. I don't sense he has more fear than usual of being fired. I think. Obviously, every GM and every coach in the league has a base level of fear of being fired. He hasn't in the past 3 years behaved in a way that demonstrated that he had some sort of fear over his job. But I like to think, based on everything he said and based on a lot of what he's done in the last 2 years, that Bergevin would not allow his own job security to cloud his judgment on a deal like that. I don't think it would, personally. No.
Well, it'd be good if it did not cloud his judgment, because you have to put this scenario in the bigger picture of what will the Canadiens look like next year. And if are you sure that, you know, this team is going to make such a step forward that they're going to finally end up in the playoffs? And if they're not, well, what's the point of keeping Petry anyway? So you could decide to bite the bullet and suffer for 1 year and reap the long-term benefits after that.
Yeah.
But if you go along that road, well, go knock at Carey Price's door and say, well, Carey, you know what? Maybe it's time.
Yeah. Remember that thing about how you didn't want to wait? Well, yeah. You're gonna have to wait.
Yeah, that's it. Exactly. Yeah. So, but that's the road that that Marc Bergevin has taken. That's the hill that he's decided to die on. So.
Yeah. Yeah, but you raise a good point, because that's actually more so than his own job security. I think that's actually what's weighing on Marc Bergevin is Weber and Price and the fact that he's banked everything on those two guys. And he knows that there's a finite amount of time where those guys are going to be effective players. And so he's got to try and hit that window. And the window might have closed, frankly. I mean, Price has had terrible stretches in each of the last two seasons where he was awful, right around the same time of year in November.
Yeah.
Every both years.
And before that, it was a whole season.
Before that, a whole season. So, you know, it's. Would that be the worst thing? If he got into a situation where, of course not.
But it
would take the Canadians realizing that if they just came out and said, listen, we're trading guys away this year because they're at their highest value. You know, you could argue Tatar is at his highest value right now. Mm-hmm. They're not going to get more for Tatar at the draft. Maybe at the draft, but probably not. Right now, when you have two playoff runs, you're getting this is he is at top value right now, and to sign him at age 30 would be somewhat counterproductive. I would think it just wouldn't really fit with what they're trying to do here. So, you know, if they decide to go that route and traded say a bunch of guys, the three guys we've talked about, Tatar, Petrie, and Domi, which I don't think is going to happen, but they could do that if the market's there for it and the return is good, and just come out and say, listen, we're going to do this. We have a lot of young players coming in. We're going to do this with those guys. Those guys and the younger veterans that we have on the team now. Next year might be difficult, but we think 2 years from now we're going to be a pretty competitive team. So just bear with us. Mm-hmm. I think most of their fans would be like, okay, finally. Like, finally a clear vision and path to something. Like, finally you're coming out and you're being clear about something. I think they would accept that. And I don't think that the Canadians feel they would. Bergevin said it flat out to us in terms of the rebuild thing at the beginning of the season, how this is not the most patient market, blah, blah, blah. They've never been given a chance to be patient. They've never been given an opportunity. This organization has never trusted its own fan base enough.
No, but they said them. But ironically, they tested their patience for the last 5 years.
I know. That's the deal.
So, they wasted a lot of the fans' patience by middling waters.
Yeah, exactly. So it would be good for them to not totally go to the bottom of the league and be bad for years and years, but like have maybe one more difficult season and let the prospects develop a little bit and come back at them 2 years from now.
Okay, so if we come back, let's leave Price, Weber, and rebuild aside for a minute. Just look at the trade deadline between Tatar and Domi. Trade deadline or this summer, which one of the two do you think would be the most likely to be traded?
In between
Tatar and Domi,
either at the deadline or at the draft,
right? Because I'll say
I really got to think Domi's. I really got to think Domi's going to get traded. I really feel like that's the case.
Because there were people on Twitter that was asking me the same question. And I tend to say the same thing.
Yeah. I really get that sense, but I don't have anything. I'm not basing that on anything. I'm basing it on the fact that I feel like the longer this season goes, and even, no, basically from the very start of this season to now, like Domi's been a difficult fit. It's hard to see where Domi fits in the years to come on this team. He doesn't make sense on this team.
And that's because of Nick Suzuki.
It's because of Nick Suzuki. It's because of Jesperi Kotkaniemi, who's going to be given every opportunity he can get to emerge and become a very, very good NHL player, which he still most definitely has the potential to do because he's 19 years old. It's based on Philip Deneau, who I think we both assume is going to be re-signed to a contract when he's eligible to get one. And the fact that they're already considering moving Ryan Poehling to the wing, apparently, but I mean, they have Ryan Poehling at center too. So, I mean, if Max Domi can't play on the wing, which he has shown no real inclination to be able to do over the course of this season, and there are teams out there looking for centers. I mean, the Wild is just like a great fit. You know, I mean, Michael Russo was writing how they need a second line center, and Jonas Brodin is apparently available, and yeah, would just seem to be like a win-win for both teams to do that. You know, they would have Domi would slot in second line center. He would get all the ice time he wanted. He'd get on the power play. He'd be one of their best offensive players. I think he'd be happy there.
Brodin would be good in Canadiens uniform.
Brodin would be good in a Canadiens uniform. And Minnesota is a great hockey market. Like, you know, Domi would still get that same vibe he gets in Montreal. He would get it in Minnesota because the population there loves the team. They need players. You know, they're not good right now. They're not great. But it's not going to some sort of hockey backwater. It's the Wild fan base is absolutely loyal and ravenous, really. It's very similar to Montreal. just not without the history, I guess. But, you know, that would be a win-win situation. But that's, I see that happening at the draft more than anything. Right. Something like that I see happening at the draft, mm-hmm. where you do a really legitimate hockey trade with Max Domi, just because it's good to deal out a surplus. And if someone else has a surplus of defensemen and you have a surplus of speedy, crafty, offensive, handsy forwards with a bit of edge, I guess the edge part they don't have a surplus in, but everything else they have a surplus, it's, you know, I think that's something that could be done at the draft.
Yeah. Well, to me, the biggest thing is that you were talking about a fit. Tatar has found a perfect fit for him in Montreal, whereas Domi has been seeking the whole year to figure it out.
Yeah.
Much in the same way that Drouin was last year.
Yeah, exactly. Which, you know, and maybe, you know, maybe he can figure it out the way Drouin did over the offseason. Maybe he comes back a new man next year and maybe he's ready to sort of show a bit more maturity in his game. Not try as many, you know, the one thing Max Pacioretty, the term that Max Pacioretty taught me when he was here that I always use is hope plays. Max Domi is the king of hope plays. He will try and put a pass through three sets of legs and sticks and whatever to a guy waiting for a one-timer on the other side. It never gets there. 99 times out of 100, it gets intercepted. You know, he'll try and beat an extra man with a deke, you know, and winds up losing the puck. Like, this is, the hope plays have to be cut out. Or not cut out, but cut down. You know, because you want talented players to make hope plays, to try hope plays, because they're talented enough to do them. But, you know, he does them too often. So, in his case, but that's, again, the beauty of it is that the Canadiens are in no obligation to do anything with him. They could try to trade him at the draft. If it doesn't work out, fine. If Domi stands firm on contract demands, well, okay, fine. We'll go to arbitration and we'll figure things out afterwards. You know, it's like there's nothing pressing in Domi's case whatsoever. There is a timeline in Tatar's case that where they're going to need to make a decision on him.
Right. But regarding Domi, we brought it up on the podcast. I don't know if it was on the podcast. It was certainly in writing. But on the podcast, we brought up the name of Darnell Nurse from the Edmonton Oilers. And he would have been a good fit along the same lines as Brodin. And he was in the same situation as Domi in the sense that they've got the same age, both eligible for arbitration. And I think that judging that a long-term negotiations for a long-term contract seem like quite complicated between the Oilers and Nurse, and while both parties decided to go for another bridge deal, he signed for 2 years at $5.5 million, 5.6 actually. So probably that in even though they don't play the same position, there might be an impact on Domi that if he stays in Montreal. And even though he seeks a long-term contract, you know, getting him a deal that would enable him to walk through to free agency could be a potential way also to, you know, to try to get the maximum value out of him for those next two seasons. And after that, we'll see what happens.
Well, that's the thing, is that it's the UFA thing at 20, you know, basically at 28. I think Nurse will hit UFA at 28 at the end of his next contract.
Oh, so he's a year older than Domi.
He's a year older than Domi. He's 25 now. Yeah. So, but still, Domi could sign that's a similar type of a 2 or 3 year deal that walks him right to UFA. I mean, that is the way, you know, this is the Austin Matthews effect on the league, is that, you know, his contract walking him to the quickest possible, you know, route to UFA is really what's becoming the norm. But, you know, again, none of this is pressing for the Canadiens. This is what the key is, and this is the beauty of their situation right now, is that they expected to be buyers this year, really.
Yeah.
At the beginning of the season, they were making preparations to buy. The expectation was that they had cap space, they had a good team, and that they were going to hit the deadline in a similar position even, let's say, that they were last year, except this year they were going to buy.
Let's remind. Yeah, absolutely. Remember early November, where every day, where they could, you know, send Charles Ludon down, every money, every dollar they could save on the cap, they would do it, not carrying an extra forward, things like that, because they would just, you know, gather their nuts for later on in the season
for the spend.
And it did not happen.
So now they have all these situations on their team where they're not obligated to do anything, but they could if they want to. It's almost a better situation in the sense that it's not better because they're not going to the playoffs, even though, you know, barring some sort of miracle here. But, you know, they have a very advantageous situation in a seller's market where most of the sellers don't have that many players that are appealing to other teams.
Yeah.
Except the Canadians. So it's, and, you know, a couple others. But it's really an advantageous situation. And really, you know, I think Mark Bergevin can frankly salvage this season. It's such a negative vibe around what happened this year with the Canadians. If Mark Bergevin hits it out of the park at the deadline and gets all these and pulls off a whole bunch of trades that are as good as the Scandella trade was, just in different ways. If he does two or three more of those and wins the deadline flat out, then the season almost becomes positive, even though they missed the playoffs. But like something good would come out of it. You know, aside from, you know, Ben Chiarot being a great signing and Nick Suzuki emerging as the way he has, which are really the only two positive stories of the season. Shea Weber for a while, his production and his ability to come back from injury and all that was another positive. But Mark Bergevin has an opportunity here to like stamp it, to just stamp the season as being not completely a lost cause, and we've done something good here, and yeah. He's done something good here.
All right, before we move on and continue, we just want to remind our listeners that if you haven't subscribed to The Athletic yet, as listeners of The Athletic support, you can do that and get 40% off the first year of your subscription by doing so and by going to theathletic.com/athletic support. So theathletic.com/athletic support, and that will give you 40% off your first year of subscription. So it's really worth it, and that's just because you're so kind to listen to our podcast. So yeah. Thank you very much,
and that you've made it this far into the podcast. Yeah. This is your reward.
I hope people are listening
to a rant about the trade deadline. One last guy that we haven't really talked about, and I wanted to talk about because I had a chance to talk to him for a while.
My man
in Washington is Nate Thompson.
Everybody loves Uncle Nate.
Everybody loves Nate. You know, he's got that shimmy thing going after wins that, you know, the Canadian social media team does such a good job of promoting. He's just such a great – he's a really nice guy to talk to. Obviously, you know, most of you haven't had that chance. But, you know, a real veteran guy and is pretty much knows what's going to happen. Like, he's going to get traded by Monday. This will be the 3rd February in a row he's being traded. And it's kind of a testament to him and his ability to make himself valuable. He's the type of guy that teams want to have, even as a 13th forward. They just want to have the option to put him in the playoffs. And he's never made it to a cup final. He's made it to a Western Conference and an Eastern Conference final, never a cup final. And you know what I found interesting in our chat was him saying that as soon as he arrived in Providence, he arrived for the playoffs. His first professional year, he arrived at playoff time for the Providence after his college season ended, and so the coaches there told him, like, you got to find something to be good at. So from that point on, he decided, I'm going to be good at faceoffs and I'm going to be a good penalty killer. And this is what's made him such an attractive player to acquire at the deadline. That's why Mark Bergevin acquired him. Before that, that's why the Kings acquired him at the deadline. They were actually in the exact same position the Canadians were when they acquired him. They were just on the cusp of the playoffs. Didn't spend a whole lot. Well, actually, he came to LA with Dion Phaneuf, which actually turned into a disaster. But still, the Nate Thompson part was good. And it's because, you know, every coach, and this is actually the funny anecdote that's not in the story that I wrote about Nate Thompson last night. So I'm talking to Nate Thompson, and I go, so that's when I asked him. I was like, you know, like, how did you know to become this guy? This guy that everyone wants at the deadline, this guy that coaches love having, this guy. Like, who told you to be this guy? And he told the story, and I was like, and in asking the question, I was like, you know, like, there's certain guys, like Lehkonen. Lehkonen's always going to be able to find a job because coaches love this guy, and they're always going to love him because of the things he's good at. And So
that was right before he was scratched.
That was hours before he was a healthy scratch for the first time in his career. I don't know if Nate knew it or not, but he didn't say anything. But that's the guy used as an example of what Nate Thompson has done, is basically maximizing his skill set by finding a niche and making himself valuable and creating value in himself. He's 35 years old. He worked his ass off all summer to be quicker. He fills that role of responsible fourth line center perfectly. Claude loves using him. He got two long shifts in the last 5 minutes of regulation. He was on the ice when the Capitals tied the game with 21 seconds left. Because he's always on the ice in those situations. One mm-hmm. goal lead, he's going to be on the ice. And teams like that in the playoffs, having a guy that they can throw out there at the end of games with one goal lead. So I'll be curious to see what kind of return Bergevin can get for him. But I think he's the only person on the team right now who I can say with any degree of confidence will be traded by Monday at 3 o'clock.
When the Canadiens acquired him, they gave up a fourth-round pick and they received a fifth-round pick in return. So all in all, in order to get a full year of Nate Thompson, they went back 19.
In order to get. Not a full year.
Oh, actually, because they the rest of the season, and then they signed him for a year. Yeah, but I mean for the balance of the season, they ended up moving back 19 ranks in the draft. You know, from late fourth round to early fifth round. So I wouldn't get necessarily my hopes too high in terms of the sort of return that you can get for Nate Thompson, where you know.
Of course not. No one's expecting. But honestly, if he gets,
because there's going to be, yes, I agree that there is a demand for that sort of player.
If you get a fourth round pick, that would be a coup, I would think.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
A fourth round pick would be phenomenal if return for Nate Thompson.
But I mean, he hasn't gotten any younger since the Canadiens acquired him. That's what I'm saying. He's remained the same player. So I personally expect a six. You know, if he brings back a fourth, that'll be amazing.
Well, so this guy, he's been traded 1, 2, 3 times. Okay, once it was for a fourth round pick and a seventh round pick. Another time, again, coupled with Dion Phaneuf for Nick Shore and Marian Gaborik, and then the trade that you just mentioned. So, you know, I feel the things that he brought, I feel like Mark Bergevin could probably get a fourth round pick. It's mm-hmm. not the end of the world if he gets a fifth or a sixth or whatever. But you know, I'd like to see Nate Thompson go somewhere and win. That'd be cool for him.
That'd be so good. That'd be so good. And in the meantime, he's sometimes people say, oh, you make too much of leadership and off ice qualities and whatnot. But consistently over the course of the season, Nick Suzuki, Ryan Poehling, and even Jake Evans, those three guys, each in their own time, have spoken in glaring terms about Nate Thompson.
And even KK.
Even KK.
Yeah. Even KK, they worked on faceoffs a lot after practice. He's had a really positive influence on a lot of the young guys in the room, a lot like Ilya Kovalchuk has, and which is why I think the Canadiens are even entertaining the idea of signing him, is because of the influence he's had in that room. Mm. So we'll see. We'll see if Kovalchuk puts his name on the dotted line before Monday. We'll see if Mark Bergevin has got some... Because the one thing we haven't mentioned here, which I think we should stress, is Mark Bergevin is likely working on something that we have not even considered. Yes. In all likelihood, knowing his history, he has something going on that, even though we have spent weeks speculating on what he might do, he's working on something that we haven't even thought about.
If he was playing baseball, he'd be a left fielder.
Yeah, exactly. Coming out of left field.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's good. I like that.
Thank you.
Okay, that's it for us. We went a little long today just because it's our last full episode before the trade deadline. Our regular Monday episode, we're going to postpone to Tuesday because Monday's going to be bonkers and we're going to be working too much on sort of our core job, which is to write. So we're gonna beg off on Monday. We'll have a little mini podcast on Tuesday just for Athletic subscribers. And again, to remind you of Marc-Antoine's point If you want to read all the trade deadline coverage that's going to happen between now and Monday, and if you want to listen to that podcast on Tuesday, you can subscribe at theathletic.com/athletic support, theathletic.com/athletic support for 40% off your first year subscription to not only read us, but read our entire network of NHL writers, our entire network of MLB writers, our entire network of NFL writers and NBA writers and soccer writers and you name it. So if you haven't jumped on board, please do so. No better time than the weekend before the trade deadline.
Amen to that. Thank you, everybody. See you again soon. Bye-bye.